This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It has been a wild couple of weeks for mega cap earnings. So what happens when you blow out the numbers and beat Wall Street estimates by 20%? Meta did that, and the stock dropped like a rock when they revealed just how much they were going to spend on AI. Or what happens when you miss Wall Street expectations completely, like Tesla did, and the stock jumps 30% because Elon Musk talked about his vision for the future? And I have to say, I think that was his best performance on an earning call, maybe ever. A few days ago, Amazon reported record-breaking earnings, but the stock really didn't move much at all. Some highlights: double-digit margins for the first time ever, earnings up 13% year over year, AWS sales up 17%. That's the biggest jump in a long time. Operating income doubled, way better than expected. Net income more than tripled. International sales, which was a $2 billion loss a year ago, nearly a $1 billion gain. The advertising business grew 24%. These are just some of the numbers that investors are talking about. And today on Dumb Money, what most investors are not talking about.
This is Dumb Money Live.
Hey there, Dave here, along with Chris and Jordan. We are Dumb Money. Welcome to Dumb Money Live. Do us a favor, if you don't mind, take 2 seconds, find the like button. It's somewhere on your screen right now. Give it a gentle smash for the almighty algorithm. Chris, Jordan, Amazon has been on fire, up 20% year to date, 80% in the past 12 months. It's one of our biggest holdings. And Chris, I know that you've been watching it closely and have found a few things that most investors are missing about Amazon stock, right?
Yeah, Dave. So Amazon actually is still my number one holding. It's the largest holding in my portfolio. I think it has been for years. And, you know, more than anything else, I love reading earnings reports. I talked about this in the past. Earnings reports are like my porn, dude. I like it. I read this.
That's awkward.
I know, but it's, I love it.
I don't want to hear what you're doing with Jazzy's words.
I'm telling you, man. I told Jordan this morning. I read the earnings report and the Q&A transcript twice, because I almost didn't believe what I read. And I was like, I just got to read this again and let it soak in, because over the past 30 years, I'm not sure if I've ever read a better earnings report than this, honestly.
I know.
Like this could be the best earnings report I've read in 30 years, and just the most impressive. I know you went over some of the numbers, Dave, but I think it's really important for people to understand exactly what's going on here. Okay. So we have a company that did $46 billion of cash flow. That's after their lease. It was like $50 billion of cash flow before their lease commitments in the quarter. Okay. Understand something. They guided for operating income this next quarter of 10 to 14 billion. Okay. Which was larger than the street at 11 to 12 billion. Okay. Now, their North American business was $362 billion. I think international was $134 billion. I'm showing they still had a very small loss internationally, but we'll talk about why that's really important in a minute. Okay. The debt reduction, they reduced, $16 billion of debt from $73 billion to $57 billion. But the biggest thing to look for in that earnings report is the operating margin. Their operating margin jumped from 3.7% a year ago to 10.6% this quarter. I was just at a venture conference this weekend in Arizona, Howard Lindzen's Social Leverage, and I was talking to one of my buddies there about Amazon pre-earnings. And he was talking about how sell-side analysts have been talking for 15 years about how eventually they would get up to operating margins of double digits, but no one believes it's ever going to happen. And here we are a few days later, and it just happened. But what's so unbelievable about these numbers is that they put out that those numbers even with a $2 billion loss on Rivian due to their Rivian position, all right? So just think about how much better the quarter would have been without that Rivian loss. So numbers aside, because the numbers are a very big piece of this, the one thing that I think nobody knows about Amazon, and nobody would ever say this about Amazon in 2024, is that they are still in the early stages of growth in just about every single product division that they're involved with. I know that sounds ridiculous, right? It's a $2 trillion company. It's a $2 trillion company.
Because the world has changed. Their AWS, the biggest contributor to their margins, their highest margin business, has a whole new world. And they now get to start over and build out even more infrastructure. And it's...
Yeah, that's part of it, Dave. But there's a deeper story here and something that Andy Jassy said on the earnings call that I think Chris probably wants to talk about that I think lets us know that there's growth not just in that category.
Yeah, so and I do have some really important questions for Jordan on the AWS side. But okay, since we're talking about AWS, let's just say AWS is now a $100 billion run rate business. And we're going to talk about how every single product that Amazon's involved with is in very early stages still. I know it sounds insane. So AWS, 85%, according to Jassy, 85% of the global IT spend is still on-premise and hasn't moved to cloud. 85%. Now, Jassy says that he expects that to flip, meaning that he believes that at some point in time, and I imagine this will take a couple decades, but at some point in time, 85% of the world's IT spend will be cloud and only 15% will be on-premise. So first question for Jordan is, because this is the world that you've been living in, Jordan, for 12, 13 years, every day of your life. You were one of the very first developers I've ever known, engineers I've known, to dive deep into AWS in the very early days of one of our startups, eCarless. Everything you've built has been on AWS, going all the way back to the earliest days. Do you think that that statement has any chance of being correct? Because if that is correct, AI aside, we are talking about a 5 or 6x increase for Amazon's cloud business, which if you think about that over the next 20 years, that would be so astonishing. And then related to that question, on the AI side, do you believe that the introduction of AI will rapidly accelerate the move from on-premise to cloud? Because a lot of these AI tools and a lot of the functionality around AI and natural language models kind of forces you, for at least that component of your business, to leverage the cloud. And why? So can you just touch on
that? Let's start with this 85% number. That's insane that there's still 85% of, and I assume he's talking infrastructure, not just IT spend, but infrastructure spend is still happening on-prem. That blows my mind that any organization would be doing that instead. I mean, you're talking like huge capital expenditures on hardware that you know just goes out of fashion, out of favor. You know,
but give me the example that you told me earlier about give me the example you told me about earlier, one that you're very close with.
Yeah.
Who's using on-prem and why they might still be on-prem.
Yeah. So you got to realize that it's not just startups. It's not just, you know, big organizations, but that you've got all sorts of stuff going on in this number. You've got local governments. You've got state governments. You've got mid-sized corporations that are all running a certain portion of their IT infrastructure in-house. So things like Active Directory servers and mail servers and FTP sites and all of these things. It's not just hosting, you know, web and, you know, public facing portions of the technology. It's also, you know, all of those types of things that go into this infrastructure spending, I'm pretty sure. All of which are just services that you could use on AWS Cloud and probably spend about the same amount, maybe slightly less, and have a lot less susceptibility to outages and things going on. I was talking to Chris earlier about a company that he used to work with that, they hosted everything on-prem. And think about that. So like if you're hosting some critical piece of IT infrastructure on-prem, and it hosts to the world, right? And there's a construction project down the street. They cut a cable, your power goes out, and all of a sudden you're not able to service, you know, your customer requests. It's insane. So if that's true, if there's 85% that's still on-prem, I think there's 100% chance that number drops, right? Now, how fast and how far does it drop? Does it drop to 15% on-prem? And to be honest, when he said 85% was on-prem, if you were to just ask me what my guess was on what is on-prem versus cloud, I would have put 30% on-prem at today, yeah. Right? 30% on-prem. But if it's 85, that number is surely to plunge from 85. And so at that point, you know, where does it go? And this has nothing to do with AI. Nobody's hosting AI infrastructure on-prem. So this is just standard servers. This is mail servers. This is just your web server. This is just your basic workload servers. And if all of that stuff's going to flip and go to the cloud, then you've still got a huge area of growth for AWS and just this on-prem to cloud switch. And I know every single organization that I've ever, you know, been a part of has some sort of on-prem that they're then migrating to the cloud, and that takes forever because we know some of these bigger organizations take forever. Big Fortune 500 companies have been doing things the same way forever. They've got all of this investment into infrastructure, and that stuff takes time to switch. And like you said, Chris, is it going to be decades? Man, I don't know. I would think that a lot of this hardware is going to age out. And do you want to go down the road of a big capital expenditure, or do you want to let Amazon provide that capital expenditure for you, and it just becomes an OPEX, right? And it's just an operating portion of your budget. AWS, it's consistent every month. You know your bill's going to be XYZ, and it is what it is.
And then for anyone that's wondering, but hey, you know, we've heard that, you know, Microsoft is catching up, and they have been catching up. Microsoft has been actually growing Azure services quicker recently than AWS, but AWS, even the last few quarters, has been adding more revenue than Microsoft within the cloud division. But technically, because Microsoft is starting from a lower base, they're growing quicker. That said, this quarter, and this is stunning, not only is AWS obviously larger, I think they're a full third larger than Azure, and not only did they add more revenue to cloud than Microsoft, but they actually accelerated, okay? They actually showed more growth percentage-wise in their cloud services than even Microsoft, even with the Microsoft's AI bump due to their affiliation with OpenAI. That is stunning. That is stunning. Yeah. Let me just say this related to AI. 100,000 AWS clients around the world have utilized at least one of Amazon's Gen AI tools. 100,000 of their clients. So if we extrapolate the next 20 years and that number flipping, it seems like a safe bet that Amazon is going to maintain, possibly even increase, but maintain their share of that market.
Yeah, and I want to say something about Gen AI with Amazon is that Amazon is, I mean, you know, you can do a lot of things on you know, Google Cloud, and you can do a lot of things on Azure. And obviously, you know, ChatGPT is hosted, OpenAI is hosted on Azure. And they're, you know, they're the big dog of the most, you know, the corporate big dog of Gen AI, especially LLMs. But Amazon has a comparable set of products. And instead of, you know, one set of models by one organization, you can pick, oh, I want to use Facebook's Llama. I want to use this. I want to use that. And you get a choice of which LLM product and which models you want to use. And it's all wrapped up in a service, just like it would be from OpenAI, right? So you have a choice. You can either use these services that Amazon's already prepackaged for you and use them just on a cost per call basis. Or if you really want to, you've got some model that you need to host yourself, you can use Amazon's GPU-based instances, and they're crazy expensive, by the way, and host the models yourself. Or if you're actually utilizing LLMs at that big of a, you know, at that big of a scale that it makes sense to host it yourself, then you can do it yourself all on AWS. And so there's no, I think that AWS actually has a better story to tell on the AI offerings that they package, and that's kind of their strong point, anyways. Is just letting customers decide how they're going to do their workload and providing APIs and different workloads that you can use to solve your problems.
But on that subject, Jordan, I'm going to skip ahead to my number one threat to Amazon, the number one concern that I have that keeps me up at night, having a really large position in Amazon as it relates to AWS. There's a lot of hype right now about OpenAI's GPT-5, about how it could potentially blow everyone else out of the water when it gets released, which could be as soon as the next few weeks. Now, if ChatGPT-5 comes out and it kind of just is the Anthropic killer, right? Like it kills all these other language models and the entire world is like, dude, this is insane. We have to utilize ChatGPT-5 as our LLM. Obviously, Microsoft has that language model exclusively in terms of if you need to utilize it, you're using it on Microsoft's cloud. My question to you is, for all of these existing customers of Amazon's cloud and potentially all of the new ones, how does that negatively impact Amazon? Does that mean that you are going to potentially flip over to Microsoft's cloud and Azure? Does it give them a meaningful advantage, or is this more of a plug and play type product where it's not an issue? It's not going to impact the way that you work at all. If you're on Amazon's cloud, you can still access that. Tell me what is the risk there for Amazon?
Yeah, so here's the risk in that any company is going to have some set of, any company, they're going to have their own infrastructure, their own databases, their own application servers, their own load balancers, your own queue services that are already running in some cloud, whether it be Google, Microsoft, Azure, and that stuff's not going to change. That's sticky. So then you've got a ton of hours that have already gone into putting this stuff into place. And then for the LLMs that people are utilizing, and I've seen this every time I talk to anybody, is that you're not bought into one LLM. You have development environments that are running, and you've got some middle layer where you can just click a button and say, okay, well, I need to be able to see the difference between running this against ChatGPT, Llama 2, you know, five or six or seven different Grok. So we had Eugene B. Shout out. I would pick Grok over AWS. Well, it's not. That's not the question, right? For LLMs, Grok is just one chunk. Just like, you know, it's just one little plug and play piece, and it's a great LLM, by the way.
You've been using it, right?
Testing all of these in the background, and so your production environment could be running Llama in 1 week, and then if there's a major change for GPT-5 when it comes out, then you would hot swap and just change out which model you're calling. And so that piece of incremental, whatever that incremental spend is you're using for your LLM, would then go over to, you know, would go directly to OpenAI, and to, you know, a portion of that spend would go to Azure for the hosting fees. And so, yeah, that is a concern that they do come up with some model that's the killer, and now all of a sudden you have to use it. It's not really what we've seen happen. So what's been happening is that all of the open source models have been catching up, right? And
for now,
we'll right? That's what happens. Is that GPT will come out? They'll push forward. And everybody else will kind of play catch up. And so is that incremental spend going to go to Azure/GPT for a few months and then start to trickle back off as, you know, some of the open source models?
Well, but what you just said is incremental spend, meaning it's not like someone's going to leave AWS and flip to Azure. It's just that one component, just the calls for the LLM. That's the only piece of the cloud revenue that Amazon would potentially lose out to Microsoft in that instance, correct? They're not going to lose a client entirely because ChatGPT 5 is the LLM that every single person on earth wants to leverage for their right use cases. That's a really important point. And I think
it depends on what the business use case is for the company, how big of a spend that is. So if it's, they're just using an LLM for some small portion of their product, then maybe, you know, it's probably not that big of a portion of their spend. Or if it's maybe a startup that their whole, you know, business model revolves around the use cases of AI, then maybe it's a bigger portion of the spend, right? And those dollars, I mean, with the way that people tend to, you know, organize their IT infrastructure and the ability to hot swap these models, those dollars could switch really fast, right? And that's something interesting that you haven't really seen before.
Okay. That's good info. So again, just to reiterate, I don't think people understand that we are, I don't know how many years into cloud, like a decade, you know, deep into cloud, $100 billion annual run rate business. And according to Amazon, it's just getting started. According to Amazon, there's 5 to 6x growth potentially over the next couple decades just in cloud. That's not accounting for expansion of cloud due to AI. That's just in the move from premise to cloud. That's astonishing, guys. That is something that I think people just don't give enough credit to. And for me, it's one of the biggest parts of my thesis for Amazon. But equally exciting, guys, is Amazon's retail business, right? Their store business, their product business. As large as it is, and it's monstrously large, I was blown away by the fact that they are, listen, they're 10% operating margins. They, in North America, they're generating $19 billion of operating profit. But internationally, they're basically just at break even and only at one third the revenue of North America. They're just getting started, really, globally for the store business. Globally, Amazon only accounts for 3%. Of global retail sales, 3%. Now, is Amazon ever going to account for 30 or 40% of global sales? I don't think so. But could they eventually get to 6 to 9%? I actually think that's a possibility, because if you look at the infrastructure build in logistics that Amazon has committed to over the past 10 years, and if you now look at what they're doing internationally, which is essentially replicating everything that they've done here in the US, they are making capital investments that nobody else on earth can make. And so I don't think it's completely ridiculous to think about Amazon 2 or 3xing their store business globally over the next couple decades as well. And now that they have proven that they can do that in a profitable manner, which, let's be honest, most Amazon investors even kind of doubted they would ever be able to be profitable with their store business. I wasn't even sure they could ever pull it off. It was always like a theory that people had, but they have now proven it. That business looks so unbelievably exciting. And what we always had a concern about is that to operate efficiently, to actually deliver products same day or next day, would be so expensive that it could never be profitable. Well, guess what, guys? In the top 60 cities now, Amazon is delivering 60% of packages same day or next day, okay? Same day or next day, okay? 60%. And you know what Jassy said? He said, in those instances where they are delivering packages same day or next day quicker than they ever have in the history of the company, it's actually costing them less money, not more money. So as the company gets more efficient in their ability to deliver packages quicker, it's saving the company money because it's a result of capital expenditures that allowed their entire logistics infrastructure to operate more efficiently. Now, all of this is before the age of AI robotics. So now just think about what's going to happen over the next 10 to 20 years as you have the world's largest investor in capital expenditure, AI and robotics, which is Amazon. How they continue to bring efficiency into that ecosystem. Amazon spent $14 billion this last quarter on CapEx. And you know what Jassy said? He said that will be the lowest spend this year in CapEx. That means that Amazon is looking to spend at least probably $60 billion this year on CapEx. How many other companies in the world? And we're not just talking about AI chips here, okay? Amazon is spending CapEx in every area of the business, and they're generating $50 billion of free cash flow in a single quarter. How can companies catch up? How can companies start to compete with that, guys? We are now looking at a store business, a product business, that, I mean, that business could 10x its operating cash flow here over the next couple of decades. This is, I don't think people are fully understanding what's happening with Amazon right now. It's stunning. It's stunning. I want to talk for a minute, getting back to tech and the cloud. Did you guys read about Amazon Q that they released the day of earnings? Dude,
yeah,
Jordan,
they talked a lot about it.
This is wild. So they have they're building out their AI infrastructure for kind of three tiers, like at the infrastructure level, obviously, which is what Meta is doing, which is what Google is doing, what is what Microsoft is doing. And then they're building out that middle layer, right? For those that don't want to build their own models, but want to access models and basically build on top of it. And what Amazon has always been great at is having the broadest set of tools for developers to actually extract value out of technology, right? And Jordan, that's something that you've told me over the past decade is the number of tool sets that they continue to innovate on and build is maybe one of the most unappreciated areas of Amazon.
Yeah, AWS. I mean, so when I started using AWS, what 20 years ago, 20, they had like, you know, maybe 10 or 12 different services. You know, they had the key ones like EC2, S3, I mean, RDS, they had queues, they had CloudFront, things like that. There's like your basic infrastructure type stuff that was servicized, but now they offer, I mean, I can't even keep track of all of the different service offerings that they provide. I mean, they've got probably 10 different AI service offerings that I was reading up on that, like, I didn't even know that they had yet. And that they're provide, they've got data warehousing services. They've got, I mean, it's endless. The number of, it seems endless, the number of services that they provide that they've packaged up. And generally most of their services are on a pay-per-use scale. So you don't have that big, you know, that big quantum use like you do with like spinning up a server that you're going to pay this much a month. No, it's like you pay a few cents per every few hundred or a few thousand calls or something like that. And it makes it really easy to, you know, just put together a bunch of services, not have a big IT spend until you're actually using things at scale. And I think that that makes it a really compelling use case for development teams to utilize.
But now it's not just development teams. This queue, this queue initiative, from what I understand, basically allows you to use natural language to essentially just have Amazon leverage AI to just develop apps on top
do whatever
of your
you want
company
to do.
Data set?
Like, it's going to get to the point. It's going to get to the point where, Chris, you will be able to log into Amazon and take Jordan's code from 20 years ago and just say, yeah, can you convert this to a modern language and spin it up on a new website? And here's the domain name, and it's just going to launch your website for you.
But Dave, they said that you can basically just ask it to create, I'm assuming, very simple apps, but just ask it to create apps.
They say it generates code, it tests the code, it debugs it, it transforms from one language to another. It seems pretty revolutionary. It's not the only code transforming software, but to have it kind of baked into the platform.
There's one line that this is why I read the earnings reports twice, because the second time I read it, I found this one line that I found to be just astonishing. So they have a Gen AI tool now at Amazon that will pull all of the inventory from your company's website and transfer all of that inventory to listings on Amazon stores. Okay. So, like, again, using Gen AI to extract all the, so if you have a company website and you're like, we want to be on Amazon, or you get a phone call from Amazon, they're like, hey, why don't you try out Amazon? And you're like, I don't want to deal with having to set up an Amazon. They're like, no. We use AI to just, it will just basically take your company website and it will professionally create listings of every single product that you're selling. And you'll just instantly have an Amazon store with professional, we are moving so quickly that I believe the market and the investor base can't fully absorb the implications of what companies like Amazon are able to build. And by the way, this is what they're doing with their 1.5 million employees. Again, a lot of people, again, I don't think most people know that Amazon has 1.5 million employees. And Jordan, you know this, what do they do with those employees every single year? They're maybe not as harsh as Elon, but from Bezos days, they're pretty harsh. They are cleaning that ship every quarter. They are constantly scrubbing.
Yeah, they're constantly grooming, and if you're a bottom performer, you're not gonna stay in Amazon that long.
I spent a lot of time reading like Glassdoor and you know, like reviews about what it's like to work at Amazon. I spent a lot of time reading about like ex-employees. It's brutal. And I actually have a family member that spent years working at Amazon, but it is brutal. Amazon is like working for the military. Not for everybody. It's not, that job is not for everybody, but they are militant. And as a shareholder, the fact that they've been able to pull off what they pulled off, I just sleep so well. And I've said this for years, knowing that Amazon is my number one position. And I really do feel that it's a social arb trade after all of these years, because in so many of these sectors that they're in, the investor base just does not understand what Amazon is doing. They don't believe it. They don't believe. I think today most people would not believe that Amazon is still early days in every one of these sectors that they're in. But I believe it. And that's why I still feel that Amazon is a social arb play even before we start talking about AI. One thing that really excites me, guys, and Dave, I want to get your input on this because I know you're big into the media side. I'm just stunned with what they've done with advertising in the last 2 years. I can't even believe it. But looking back, it makes so much sense. And with Prime Video now, I was laughing at Prime Video, even as an investor a couple of years ago. It's like, come on, is Bezos just wanting to like own a Hollywood studio and he's in this part of his life where he thinks it's really fun and cool? Because it seems like a waste of time, energy, and resources to me for Amazon to be going that deep into that space and spending all that money when you have to compete with Netflix, you have to compete with Disney, with HBO, you have to compete with all of these media studios and Apple. Like, how is Amazon going to pull this off? Well, here we are today. Amazon, I think this last quarter averaged like something like 115 million active viewers on Amazon Prime, and they are now just introducing an advertising model. And I was reading this last week, because this is like the 1 week where they do the advertising buy-ins for the entire year, Dave, like you know about the that upfronts. Cycle, right? Yeah, and I heard that Amazon is crushing. And I heard media executives saying that they were actually blown away by how well Amazon is doing as the new entrant into this space, disrupting everybody. Because again, Amazon not only has some of the best tech out there, but they are able to connect the dots between viewers and buyers, viewers and products in a way that almost nobody else in the world can. So is Amazon actually like the biggest sleeping advertising giant in the world? Are we going to look back at Amazon in 5 years and 10 years and think, oh my God, guys, they just took over, I mean, Google. Like they are now one of the largest advertising companies in the entire world. How the hell did they pull that off? Are we going to look back and think, you know, they actually are now one of the biggest media companies in the world? Because I'll tell you, like Prime Video, some of the shows they've been putting out, even like, I'm shocked. How do they execute so well at everything that they do? And how do they bring it all together?
I think that they're just very focused. And they spent something like $4 billion on production, but then they ended up with a show like Fallout that had 65 million viewers in the first 16 days. So
watch Fallout? Have you seen Fallout?
I have not.
The thought of watching a show that was derived from a video game makes me sick. But I saw a TikTok of a guy that said, hey, this show, if you hate video games, you will still love this show. I was like, I'll give it a shot. I love Fallout so much. Like it was one of my top shows of the year, and I cannot wait till season two. Like, this is a blockbuster show. This show is so impressively different and interesting. I loved it. Like, the people will subscribe to Amazon Prime for this show. In fact, I think the Prime membership went way up, I think, this last quarter as well. I'm trying to like keep my enthusiasm reserved right now, but I'm telling you, they are knocking it out of the park with every single thing that they do.
There's Amazon subscription revenue service was up 11% to $10.7 billion. And that includes monthly fees for Prime memberships, as along with digital video, audiobooks, all that stuff. But basically, it's all the non-AWS subscription revenue up 11%.
Wait, so they don't attribute all the Prime revenue to Prime Video, do they?
No. It's all of their subscription business that isn't AWS gets lumped into that subscription services line, and that's almost $11 billion.
It's almost laughable to me that the number one conversation that investors were having about Amazon pre-earnings was, will they or will they not issue a dividend? It is so laughable that somebody would think that Amazon's decision to pay a dividend would matter or even be a good thing. I would have been so pissed off after this earnings report if Amazon would announce a dividend. Don't you dare
give me money back. So much.
Don't you dare.
Their whole history has been investing. And we thought we were going to be underwater in Amazon for decades, and we were, but their investments pay off. And
does anybody think that they know how to spend a dollar better than Amazon and Jassy and Bezos? I don't want that money. I'm going to give it right back to you. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. Do not give me any of that money. Take the money.
I mean,
do it, all it the
helps.
Stuff.
If you need a stock boost, it helps, because when Google said 20 cents, their stock just took off.
Okay, I have a lot to say about that, because what happens when you issue a dividend for the first time is you simply get access to a host of new investors. It is a cheat code. It's a cheat code. All of a sudden, you get all the dividend investors. You get these dividend growth investors. You're going to get dividend fund investors. It's a cheat code. It's like
a quick one-time bump.
Hit of caffeine. That's it. And you know what? I saw that as a monstrously big red flag for Google. You know, I was talking crap about Google before their earnings, okay? And listen, I know that Google used it. They used the cheat code and they did well. I see major, major risk with Google. The fact that they chose to do the dividend this quarter says a lot to me. And for me, it's a red flag. I see it very differently than other investors, okay? I could talk about Google for freaking hours, but I love that Amazon was like, dude, they were like, dividend? Guys, we're just getting started. We're like a high growth company. Are you kidding me? The stuff that we plan on doing the next couple of years, you have no idea. You have no idea. No,
yeah, Amazon. I would rather see a growth company, like a real growth company, actually take their money and grow with it and not spit it off as cash.
Totally. So I did buy options in Amazon pre-earnings. I actually bought some more yesterday and I sold them today. And I'll tell you why. I have a short-term concern when it comes to Amazon, and it lasts for 1 week. Can you guess what it is?
1 week?
1 week. It starts tomorrow and lasts through like next Friday. What do you think of this? Two things. The big thing.
Check my calendar.
All right. The big thing is what happens.
We just heard J-PAL yesterday. That was the concern. And part of the reason I think that Amazon didn't take off more on such a strong earnings report.
Okay. So no, something happens every, you know, a couple quarters a year, but especially this quarter, I believe, if I can recall correctly, I believe especially this quarter, Bezos and his new fancy life and all the cool fun things that he's doing, and he's making investments. We know he invested in Figure and humanoids just like us. He invested in the same round we did. He likes to cash out this quarter, okay? And this is a big quarter. So this is a quarter where everything went right with Amazon. Stock is strong, lots of tailwinds. I see a big cash out coming next week. Let's see if I'm right. I think he has to wait 3 days, so he can't cash out today. He can't cash out tomorrow. I think he's allowed to start selling Monday or maybe Tuesday. I think we see massive insider selling by Bezos and maybe his ex-wife next week that will potentially pressure Amazon like it has the last couple of years this quarter. So I'm afraid to add meaningfully to my Amazon position until after that's over with. I'm actually
He just cashed out $8.5 billion in February, February 21st.
Okay, I get that. And you know,
he's got a pretty expensive lifestyle, though. Have you seen his yachts and all this? I mean, that guy,
he's not living just the best
life right now.
He's doing big things, right? Like he's doing big things. He's making big investments. I think he sees this as really timely. Again, this is a great quarter for Amazon. It's the best quarter maybe in the company's history. So it would be a great time to cash out and not freak anybody out because there's really nothing negative to say as it relates to Amazon. Of course, they sandbag a little bit on their guidance. Like that was so stupid. Like anybody could see through that.
So anyway, so that's a little bit of a concern. 50 million shares back in February, and Amazon, in its annual report, said that he planned to sell up to 50 million shares until January next year, subject to certain conditions.
So how many did he already sell? How many did he already sell, Dave?
He sold 50 million, and Amazon said he planned to sell 50 million.
And he already sold the 50 million?
According to the Wall Street Journal, of course, the paywall prevents me from getting any further than the first two lines of this article. I don't have a Wall Street Journal subscription.
You got to pay Jeff to read about Jeff.
You know what you could do? Well, I don't know if it works on Wall Street Journal. You could always, I put everything through Google Translate. I just paste the link. Most things I can just, it will let me read it in Google Translate. So, okay, so that is a concern. We'll see. Maybe he did sell it. If he sold all that he was going to sell last quarter, then that's great news. And if I don't hear about him selling by mid next week, I'll probably add my Amazon mid next week. But I did buy options. I did well on them. I cashed them out. I do have one more concern, though, guys. It's tonight. Apple earnings. Okay. I pulled some data on Apple. I think most of the street is concerned about this quarter. So I don't think it's going to be a big surprise if Amazon has a bad quarter. However,
we've been saying Amazon bad quarter for the whole quarter. We've been saying Apple bad quarter since the beginning of the quarter.
So maybe we get another Tesla type event where, yes, they have a bad quarter, but it's not as bad as people thought, and they hype up the next quarter or the future, and the stock does fine because expectations are low. My concern, guys, is there are a lot of expectations on Apple today related to AI. And with their dev conference, what, like a month away, yep. I don't see Apple. They are not the type of company to pump on earnings. I do not see them pumping this earnings or pumping AI. I don't think there's a lot to talk about as it relates to AI and Apple yet. I think they will talk about it in a month at their conference.
We will not see it until they're not going to release AI product announcements during an earnings call. They're going to do that at Worldwide Developer Conference, and that is in June. So we're not going to see that. And so I don't think the market's expecting them to say anything about AI.
I'm telling you, I'm seeing a lot of buzz when it comes to Apple right now that AI might save this quarter with them talking about stuff on the earnings call. I think, right or wrong, I think there is some expectation. I think it's wrong. I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to have a bad quarter.
Bad iPhone sales out of China. We're going to see bad Vision Pro sales. All of this is known information. If they're able to say something positive about their AI future, then I'm all for it. But so I just don't see it happening.
Last night, I pulled web stats on the checkout page of Apple.com. Okay. So I was basically looking at the volume of clicks on the page where you check out to actually buy something on Apple.com. And let me tell you guys, it was bad. It was bad, okay, this quarter. So maybe the service revenue saves Apple. Maybe they did so much service revenue, and maybe the Vision Pro sales even though that we know that they have lowered their forecast by like 50% this year for Vision Pro, maybe they didn't have hardly any Vision Pro in the expectation this quarter, and the sales price of Vision Pro was so high that maybe that somehow saves this quarter. It's possible.
Yeah.
But I do have some concerns, and I think that Apple could be a risk factor tonight just for the tech sector generally tomorrow. So I didn't want to like be levered Amazon tomorrow. So I exited those calls today. I want to add in some way, I'll probably add some kind of like, I don't know, maybe I'll do some like 3-4 month out call options in Amazon that I'll buy next week as soon as I'm comfortable with the fact that Bezos isn't going to dump more on us. But that's my risk factor for next week. Other than that, guys, I'm in love with Amazon again.
You got excited about it again. It's been a while. It was just like flat for the longest time. And to see it go up 80% in 12 months is just exciting and reinvigorating. And to see their profit margin to top 10.7%, we've never seen that.
Dave, to see it go up 80% and then be equally excited about the future on top of that move, that's what's astonishing. Because like you would think after that move, they really have to wow me at this point to be like, you can make a rational argument that that move was now valid because of what they've achieved and what they're doing. But can they show a future that is something meaningfully bigger than anything that investors already have in their mind when it comes to Amazon? I think they did. I believe it. I see Amazon as a $5 to $10 trillion company someday. I really do. I've never been more excited about that company. They are still early. They're a small company. They're early stage. They're Amazon,
a small company. Yes. They're a micro cap.
Yeah. Amazon. I think the takeaway here is Amazon is still early stage in every sector they participate in. I think it's the exact opposite of how investors perceive Amazon. I'll remind everyone, we're not financial advisors. These are just our opinions on how we see Amazon, why I'm investing in Amazon. I think everyone has their own risk tolerance. Everyone, you know, should be making their own decisions. Do not buy Amazon because of what you saw today on the show, but I hope it sparks some.
Think about the things that we've said and then figure out what makes sense for you.
Completely. Jordan, I think you made me feel a little bit more comfortable about the risk factor as it relates to ChatGPT. However, I do think there is short-term risk. If ChatGPT comes out with 5 and it astonishes the world, I think the perception, again, right or wrong, the perception of investors that Microsoft is the exclusive beneficiary of that might temporarily benefit Microsoft and be a net negative for Amazon in the eyes of investors if and when that happens in the next few weeks. So that is a concern for me over the next few weeks, assuming that ChatGPT 5 comes out and it is as amazing as people are expecting it to be, okay? I know that in the long run, Amazon is likely to capture the vast majority of the cloud business, regardless of whether or not it's ChatGPT or Anthropic or, you know, Meta's open source LLM. I think Amazon is in the pole position, but investors might not think that short term. And we have to pay attention to the way investors perceive things in the market, not just
the way it's, you know, if there is some event like that, I think it's a short term thing, and then you get your open source models that are going to come in and catch up within months to whatever the advancements are.
I will say that watching
it's basically what's been happening so far. That and the fact that GPT-4 is basically unusable with how slow
it is. I hate it. I hate GPT-4, but you know what? So does Sam Altman, and the new videos that are coming out almost every few days now of Sam Altman just ripping in different ways, ripping on GPT-4, his own product, is getting people so excited about GPT, including me. Like, I'm so excited to see the GPT-5. I cannot wait to see it. I will say, if it's not great, it's going to be one hell of a disappointment and probably a big negative for the entire tech sector. So we need GPT-5 to be awesome. So like,
yeah, we need to keep basically they need to keep pushing the envelope. Somebody needs to be if it's not OpenAI, it's got to be somebody pushing the envelope. We saw inference chips push the envelope on speed with delivering results from LLMs, and I think that's actually really encouraging, at least for development use cases. But yeah, the models need to get better too.
Who's behind that new 2.5 chatbot? Is that Inflection?
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
I have to go almost to Oklahoma to look at an investment in a horse trailer company.
What? That sounds random.
We are looking at an opportunity to potentially acquire a horse trailer company. It's a long story, okay? It's a long story. I'm not a horse guy. You're way more of a horse guy than me, okay?
I mean, I have a pet horse that I see occasionally. Apparently, I also now have a baby horse. One of Megan's horses has a baby now. So I might be in the market for a trailer. I don't know, but I'm not buying a trailer company.
I might be ready to sell you one pretty soon. So I have a guy waiting outside of my house to take me to almost Oklahoma to see a horse trailer business that we're potentially looking at. We do the weirdest stuff, man.
You're gonna go see a man about a horse trailer. All right, so we can wrap it up. We're almost at the hour mark anyway. So it is time to say goodbye and time to remind everybody to tune in next time. You never know when we're going to do a show. So if you're not subscribed, can't tell you what to do about that. If you're a longtime viewer, I'm no longer telling anybody to subscribe. You just do whatever you feel is best for you. All right. We're Dumb Money. Thanks for watching. We'll be back next week.